Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. Not only is Bluehost Cloud our fastest web hosting available, but it's also built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you can get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
It is winner take all time in the NBA and NHL, and FanDuel is giving you a shot to bring home a big win of your own. Because right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 bet. That's $150 to bet on spreads, money lines, player props, and more. Just visit FanDuel.com/247 and make every playoff shot count. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, it's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. I'm a veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, daily YouTube videos, and I'm a longtime podcaster. Also, I have metastatic stage 4 prostate cancer that came out of remission in January. During the 2020 pandemic, my doctors advised me to stay at home, and the Life of Fitz podcast was born. 4 years later, I'm back in my cancer fight and continuing this podcast, calling the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who I have met throughout my 35 years in this industry. And now I'm adding in some new friends to my call list. And of course, I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. Back in 1969, Pat Bosco was seeking a new college. He was a junior, and he wrote a bunch of schools, and the only one that really replied with any substance about what the student life was like was Kansas State. He's from Syracuse, New York. So he got on some planes, and he remembers flying into Manhattan on a little three-seater. This place is beautiful. He became student body president. He started to work for the school. And eventually, he was elevated to the vice president for student life at Kansas State. If you were a student being recruited or you were on campus, Pat Bosco was involved in some way. And when John Wiefald was called in to rescue Kansas State University, he was the first person Doc Wiefald elevated because they had an immediate connection. They were on the same page. And Bosco helped grow this institution to enrollment figures it had never seen before. He was part of a great team in the 90s that turned around the entire future of Kansas State. Pat Bosco and his purple cars, Pat Bosco and his handshake, Pat Bosco and his eternal optimism is so K-State. As I said, he retired in 2019. He still calls this place home, and he'll never leave. And I'm so glad that I was able to get Pat Bosco on as this week's Life of Fitz guest. So now, let's call Pat Bosco, the internal optimist and ball of energy in Manhattan, Kansas.
Tim.
Hello, my friend. How are you doing?
Very, very fine.
What keeps you busy these days?
Oh, my Lord. We decided about 3 years before I announced my retirement. I was 67. We're going to retire no matter what. When I was 70, that was a promise I made to my wife, Susan. And I was trading all of my titles, vice president, dean, and whatever they had for me, traded all in for grandpa. And we sent our lives around being grandparents to Hannah and Henry, who live in Kansas City. They're 9 and 12. And so we center everything around our activities. I coach my daughter, Mary Catherine, and I coach our 9-year-old daughter, granddaughter in softball. And we have a family consulting business that we hold a national leadership conference every year in November. We travel a great deal, still raise money for my my scholarship programs, the Bosco Leadership Scholarship Programs. And enjoy Las Vegas and cruising and having just a wonderful time.
Sounds pretty good.
Of course,
good.
Go to K-State football, basketball games, and I'm a tremendous fan, as you know.
Yeah, that just sounds awesome. I'm ready. Will you adopt me? I mean, I'm a little old.
I tell you what. My wife's making her world-famous spaghetti for lunch. You can come over for meatballs. Oh, no, you can't come over there. She's already preparing just enough meatballs for me.
Which is like a half pound, 2 pounds, somewhere in there.
About that.
Pat, it was a remarkable career. When you came, what was it, 1971 when you came to Manhattan?
Yeah, actually, 1969, my first semester at K-State.
Wow.
First home football game. We won two away games, and we watched the two games away in the field house floor, which might be your listeners remember was all dirt.
Yeah.
And then our first home game was Penn State. They came in, and as an East Coast product, watching Penn State come in nationally ranked, we lost 17-14, almost beat them. And then the next week, Oklahoma came in. Of course, we had homecoming and we beat them. It was 59-21, something like that. Shocked the world. I thought that was K-State football.
With
Lynn Dickey and his white shoes and Vince Gibson, we're going to win. And Purple Power, it was incredible.
So you were watching games at the stadium when the stadium was brand new.
Yes. And also, we had cards in 69. In the student section, we held up messages. People don't remember that.
Yeah, that was such a cool football tradition that went away. But I remember seeing those photos. Yeah, that'd have been cool. You couldn't get kids to do that nowadays. They wouldn't put down their phones long enough to focus on flipping the right card at the right time.
Well, some campuses don't have enough students coming to the football games to hold up the sign that they put up. We put up either Doom or Family or the Power Cat. Become a great tradition for us.
Any inkling at the time that you would end up having a career at Kansas State, let alone an entire career at Kansas State?
No. People that are in higher ed, particularly student life, are individuals that have a tipping point or a role model. Someone, while they're at their undergraduate school, influence them enough to say to themselves, "Well, wait a minute, that's a career. I could go into higher ed and be around young people and build a sense of community." So college professors, deans, vice presidents usually you don't think about it. There's a person in your life as an undergraduate that was a role model that influenced you, and you decide to, well, wait a minute, I'd like to be like her or him. And mine was Chet Peters. He was our vice president and my mentor throughout my years at K-State as a student leader, and then hired me as a graduate student back in 1971.
Wow. And you were student body president, correct? You ran this show.
Well, I came just right time at the right place. And came here in 69, did not know a soul. Didn't know much about Kansas State other than the conversations I had with the director of admissions, and didn't know anyone. And 4 months later, was elected student body president by the largest vote total in school history. Bernard Franklin beat me about 5 years later. Wow. He was a write-in candidate and very popular. At least I was on the ballot.
Just incredible. I mean, incredible. And then you just never left, and it transitioned into the Weefald years, which is, you know, was life changing for you and a lot of us. I mean, I wouldn't be doing this without the Weefald years, probably. How those initial days of John Weefald, when he's coming in and put together his team and dreaming that Kansas State doesn't have to be 16,000 and football can win, and all the stuff that he thought of, we can go get the best and brightest in Kansas. How was that received initially?
You have to understand, and you were around President Weefald, so you know the personality and his passion was just undeniable. He had a can-do attitude and a look in his eye that was infectious and also sometimes scary for those around us. I know there's been books written about him, but during the COVID years, my wife Susan and I binged on several programs, Suits. And then Suits, the lawyer, reminded me a little bit of the Weefald days, Suits, Yellowstone, and Sopranos. Now, no one really got whacked during the Weefald years, but there was an individual in administration that if that person took you out for lunch on a Friday afternoon, you didn't come back on Monday. You were gone. So during those initial days, I was his first administrative appointment. Very first day he arrived as president, he called me in his office. We only met briefly in a hallway when he came in for a visit, like in May, just stopped in to say hello. So when I was called to his office, I didn't have any idea what he wanted me for. I was assistant vice president in student life, and I had a job that was what I thought was fairly impactful. He didn't think much of it. He thought I was like fourth or fifth team, and I just let him believe that. But he called me in the office and said, I'm going to put you in charge of our recruiting efforts, and you're going to be able to speak for me. And his charge was that within a year, we want one more student, one more new student than we had in the fall of 86. We'd gone from like 13,000. We'd gone from 18,000 to about 14,000 during a five-year period of time, and things were in total disarray. And he wanted to, he said that that I am going to use the success that we have in enrollments to transform the university. So you're going to establish a beachhead, and I'm going to give you the resources and authority. He always, when he delegated responsibilities at Tim, he would always give you responsibility and the authority to move, sometimes move mountains. And K-State is a microcosm of universities all over the United States. Complex, and everybody has a PhD, and they all think they know how to do everything. They may be great at scholarly work or research or teaching, but they believe they can raise money, they can recruit, they know everything about marketing, they can do everything. And they've never had the experience in any of that. So everybody has an opinion, and Weefald would cut through all that and say, you know, we're going to go this way and head a way of communicating that vision in a way that everyone would get it. And that was part of his tremendous makeup. He did that throughout his 23 years. It was remarkable. Transformational leader, tremendous strength. and you had to be accessible at all times. I'm sitting at our dining room table, and I remember being called Christmas morning, Thanksgiving dinner. I know he called. I'm sure he called you at times. He was always engaged, and he attracted. And the important part about leadership is you attract people around you that believe in the same things you believe in. And he did that. He inherited an administration that did not believe or understand his vision. He had individuals initially that he inherited that simply were entrenched and thought that the status quo would help the university. Matter of fact, we're predicting decline enrollments, and it was natural that we should decline. We could be smaller and better. Individuals that didn't quite, he had, I'm sure people have passed now, but he had a finance vice president that didn't know how to free up dollars throughout the university and didn't know how to do it. And we followed, would never really take no for an answer. He was always interested in surrounding himself with individuals that were problem solvers, that he had, you couldn't present him with a long lecture of what the problem was. All he wanted was a solution. He never, if you had a mistake on the table, if you made a mistake, you admit the mistake, and then he didn't want to hear about what caused it. He wanted to go to the solution. How are we going to solve the problem? Now, maybe later on he'd worry about, well, how the heck did this happen? In a colorful way of expressing that often, of asking, well, what happened? But initially he was really interested in how do we solve this? How do we do it now? How do we solve a problem now? So we learned a lot from President Weefald, and I don't think of anything, Tim, that he didn't touch in a positive way throughout the academy.
I mean, everything you just described is a master class in being not only a great leader, but a disruptor. When the status quo, people have settled into it and accepted it, it's hard to get people out of that and realize, no, there can be something different. And he really did reinvent a university that was, destined for a much smaller status in the academic and athletic world, and he saw something better. And when it came to football, he saw something literally no one else saw, seemingly at the time, but that played such a big role. And the enrollment started to turn around. I'd like to point out that I feel like I'm somehow responsible for the decline in enrollment, because that was during my college years from 82 to 86.
Oh, you were mid-80s. I remember you as an undergraduate.
Yeah.
Mid-80s, right?
Yep. I'm pretty sure my drunken behavior drove off many students, so I feel ashamed.
There were a lot of factors that affected our enrollments during the early 80s. But in 86, we were in horrible shape. The foundation was not raising a lot of money. Our endowments, we had no technology at the university to really speak of. We often think about the unbelievable success that Coach had. In many ways, the entire university was in a tough bind across the academy. It really was a very Weefald inherited a good school. We were attracted. You were attracted. We're K-State grads. We love our school. We were good. He moved us from good past successful and great. He made us relevant.
Right.
We became relevant in so many ways.
Yeah, I remember I graduated in journalism. We weren't even accredited at the time.
We lost our accreditation.
Yeah.
In fact, we lost it just, it might be just before he arrived. It was another blow to Bill Brown, to our journalism graduates. And yet we sold journalism that wasn't accredited. Enrollments went up in the School of Journalism in 87, 88, 89. Realizing that we went from, we enrolled 3,000 more new students from 86 to 89, only won one football game, and we had 5,000 more students in the fall of 92, 5,000 more students than we had in 86. And that was before Coach was successful in football.
Right.
We had reached our critical mass and we're well on our way. Much easier if we'd won some football games during that time. But once things took off, matter of fact, the other day, I watched the first half of the Texas game in 98.
Oh, yeah.
What just so many wonderful memories. But anyway, it just happened that in 98, we were on our way.
Yeah, I lay witness to the start of the transformation of the the university aside from sports. And I remember when Doc arrived, it's just like the whole energy of the place changed. We didn't understand that we were kind of functioning in this downtrodden world because it was just what we existed in. And then Doc came along and started talking about greatness and we can do this and we could do that. And I just felt like there was a new energy and it just, it almost caught fire. I mean, and then you're out there recruiting students along with your team and the foundation started moving and the alumni say it was just a magical time for Kansas State University. And I try to explain this to people. He literally saved the university in town. Saved it.
No question.
I mean,
no question.
The existence of Kansas State would be so entirely different that without him that I can't even fathom it.
Aren't you from Saline County?
Yeah, from Saline.
Well, yep. So you didn't get a chance really to express to see the east side of the campus. You came in from the west side and three thirteen.
Yep.
But let me say that. When you came into Manhattan, you came out on a two-lane highway,
right,
8 miles off the interstate. You went over a really rickety bridge. There was a giant mill elevator as you entered. We had to cross the river in downtown Manhattan. There was a giant elevator, and there was no mall.
Yep,
there was a railroad that steel and pipe ran right in front, right down Tuttle Creek Boulevard, a freight train that was transporting steel. People don't really get the fact that when you say he transformed the universe and the community, and it was a tremendous time, a renaissance time for the city of Manhattan, for the county, for the state, and of course for our university, and all was the center point of this incredible leader. He really doesn't get enough credit, frankly, for all the things he did.
No, one of my promises I made to him before his passing was I'm going to get a road name for him. And I personally think a dormitory wasn't enough to be named Wefald Hall. It should be an academic building. But those are fights for another day. I think Scenic should be Wefald Drive as it comes into Manhattan, because Scenic Drive wouldn't exist without John Wefald. End of story.
Oh, I like that idea. Let me say, I wouldn't downplay it. I've been to Wefald Hall. It's a state-of-the-art residence hall.
Oh, I agree.
And the one thing that I can control in honoring him and wanted to do it in a very, very meaningful way. It's a beautiful building, and kids love it. But more importantly, I certainly would support the road you're talking about. That would be incredible. And you're right; it wouldn't have been anything. I mean, he touched everything on the campus, from the signage into Manhattan,
yep,
to our research, our scholarly work, faculty salaries, enrollments, and of course, athletics is just. Was phenomenal. Phenomenal success.
To bring this more relevant to the current situation, as I observe what's going on with the Big 12 Conference, I see a lot of similarities with Kansas State and now with Brett Yormark being a disruptive leader coming into the conference. I'm fascinated by his style. It's certainly more East Coast style than John Wefald had, but it's highly effective, and he's making people think in new ways and making people realize, no, the Big 12 is not going to die. It's going to be successful, and there's no reason why it won't be. And that's the same thing that Wefald brought to Kansas State. It's kind of fun to watch it happen again in a different setting.
Well, I was in the room in Anson Hall when it was expressed, maybe we're not going to be in the Big 8. Maybe we should be a Wichita State. We'd be better off. And words of people in leadership positions were expressing before John Wefald. And I was a minor player, almost a fly on the wall, listening to people in leadership positions at our school talking about we can be a Wichita State and be in a smaller conference and still make the impact that people thought we'd be able to make. So yeah, it was there. The other aspect is that comes to light is that he was able to bring together people that disagreed that weren't quite on the same page. And he was a diplomat, a negotiator. He could touch the, he would push the right button to make sure everyone was on the same page. So that was that's something that maybe he didn't write much about. You know, the day that he passed, we were scheduled to do a national broadcast on his leadership. And we had spent about 6 months organizing a podcast that would involve his administrative team. And he had written wrote about a 17-page email outlining what we should all talk about in terms of our contributions. And the broadcast was get at 9:30 in the morning, and I went ahead to log on, and I couldn't get on. And I thought maybe it was on my end because I'm a technophobe. And it turned out that we got a message that he was sent to the hospital. So even the day he was, he passed, we were having the opportunity to share his accomplishments and the kinds of things that he did for not only our school, but for the community, the state, and really the country, when you think about NMAP.
Yeah, one of my regrets, you look back at things, and as you mentioned, when John Wheatfold had you in his circle, you got called. I mean, in retirement, in work, whatever it was, he was going to call his friends and talk about things. I remember being about ready to do my own podcast, and he called, and I waved it off and thought I'd call him back, and I never called him back. And, that just sticks with you. You feel just awful.
What a
remarkable man. But like you said, you were one of his first picks, and I'm intrigued by how he went about that, because he met you for a few moments and knew. And that's another leadership thing. You just know this guy's this person's my team.
Now, I'm hoping that he would say he made some mistakes down the way of picking people. Not very many. But because he went with his gut, he had asked around, I guess, and people recommend if you're looking for someone. Now, I didn't have the heart to tell him that I knew nothing about admissions. I'd never visited a high school. I had no idea what we had in place. And I inherited a $225,000 scholarship budget. We had $225,000 for scholarships in 1986. Unheard of. I mean, we had the view book that we had, Tim, believe it or not, was done by our publications people that were in the creative arts. And the color of our view book was blue and red. Honest to God. I threw them all out. We threw them all out and had to, because I wasn't going to pass out a view book that was blue and red because of other tendencies I had about arrival. It was an interesting time. He was truly very special. And not only him, but Bob Krause. Bob Krause made everybody around him better.
And then as you mentioned, the things were rolling on campus and layer in football. It was a great deal of patience shown football. And again, another leadership trait. He didn't just hope that football would get better. He could see it. He could, there was progress there, and it took 5 years to get to a bowl game. But once 93 hit, and they just never looked back. And that too was so transformative for the university, because now you've got this beautiful front porch that everyone sees how fun Kansas State is.
Well, Coach Snyder had a plan and articulated that plan day one. I mean, I was in meetings where he had his index cards and had a list of things that he wanted done. And so if there was any, I was never in around, I was never around any conversations or any hesitancy about Coach at all. He had the full support of course, President Wheatfold and Bob Krause and the entire administrative team. There was no doubt. And when he came into a room and asked for something, you wanted to make it happen for him. Maybe it didn't happen as quick as he would have liked, but you wanted to support him, and you felt like we were going to get there. And there was always progress. And I remember I remember maybe a couple of years where we didn't have a 500 season in 90 or 91, something like that. But you just felt like it was close. It was close. And we still had band day. We had 8,000 kids show up for band day. So, and we recruited them on the buses when they came into town and spent 2 hours with the band. So whatever he was doing was giving us a chance to showcase our school, even though maybe we weren't having as much success in the wins and losses early on. But you just knew that it was going to happen.
Yeah. I remember band days. I remember the band days before Bremer's Coliseum.
Right.
And the photos of bus after bus after bus lined up in that south end zone. It was unbelievable how important band day was to having a full stadium at the time.
It was huge, and our recruiters would meet the buses at because they were assigned geographic areas. So they got on the bus at the mall, and they were the parade. They marched with our admissions representatives, marched with the band members. We had them fill out index interest cards. Then we had games before as the team was warming up, and then at halftime after the performance they'd all leave. And I'll go. That stadium was empty. So anyway, but before Coach Snyder. Then of course during his after his success, we couldn't have the band day like we had before because tickets were so scarce and expensive.
My, how things changed.
Yeah, for the good.
Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Let's move to your retirement. And you mentioned some of the things you're doing. Are you a good youth coach? I think you would be a good youth coach. Nurturing.
Well, I appreciate that.
And you had little discipline in there, but still fun.
I spent 35 years coaching competitive traveling softball and baseball in Manhattan.
I had no idea about that.
It was my hobby. It was my way of getting the pressure off. And so I spent 12 months out of the year. I was in a position where I could dictate my schedule. For example, we practice. I would do orientation enrollment in June every day. But I would do my welcome and work with parents and students, and then I would leave the campus for an hour and a half, and we'd practice in the middle of the day with my 14-year-old traveling softball team out at Optimus Field, and come back in the afternoon, showered, and spend the evening with our new students and parents. So my family, of course, were involved in it, but that was my way. We had state championships, so we went to nationals a dozen times. I had three separate groups of students or players that came out of Manhattan, softball to baseball. So, yeah, that was my hobby. So I enjoy it. I enjoy the game. Now, if I had a choice, I'd probably coach softball more than baseball. And really got President Weefald interested in softball. We came close. He was out several of the games. He watched our Manhattan Optimus Bullet team play out at Annenberg several times. We put the Krause and Weefald and others put the pencil to whether we could bring softball back to K-State. It just didn't work. The math just didn't work.
Yeah, and it still doesn't work, but boy, I wish they'd had it. I mean, softball's just blowing up into a really important sport for athletic departments.
Yeah. Right.
I had no idea you did all that coaching. How did I not know that?
Well, I mean, it was, you know, something, unless you have, you know, there's so many great things happening in Manhattan. Yeah. We have so many niches for adults and young people and children in our town. I saw the banner the other day for Manhattan Recreation, June 5th for sign up. And in Johnson County, where my grandchildren are, the recreation programs in Overland Park, they do other things. They don't know youth programs. They don't have summer softball or summer baseball or winter basketball programs. They rely on community centers to do those kinds of things. So Manhattan's a really special place. You know, we can do everything in 10 minutes and do a variety of activities during the day. In Johnson County, just yesterday I was in Johnson County. My daughter had, my granddaughter had swimming and then dance and then day camp and then a softball practice. And those are 30, 40 minute drives between places. And my grandson had robotics and lacrosse practice and swimming. So it's amazing what happens sometimes, that we appreciate the fact that everything in Manhattan is about 10 minutes to one activity to another. Whereas Johnson County just isn't that way.
It's so spread out. I've always said about Manhattan, they're going to drag me out of here because I can fly to whatever place I want to visit and always come back to Manhattan, Kansas for this, I don't want to say simple, but just more stripped down lifestyle where I don't have to have all the tension and traffic.
Uncomplicated.
That's a perfect way to say it.
Yeah. The only time we have a problem is during football, basketball nights or afternoons, and maybe Friday afternoon around Aggieville.
Yep, and of course the summer road construction.
We
should have really nice roads. You mentioned a couple activities you like to do that intrigued me. Las Vegas and cruising. Which is your preference? Different purposes, probably.
I actually started cruising because of Weefald and Krause. In the late 80s and early 90s, you didn't have the technology we have on cruise ships. So I would be able to go away for 7 or 10 days with my family and really would have a vacation. Whereas in Las Vegas, they'd find me everywhere. Or if we went to Florida on beach, they would find me. Because their administrative staff, Lynn Lumberg or Dana Hastings, were very good at finding me anywhere. But they couldn't find me on a cruise. So we discovered cruising as a family activity to get away. People think maybe Las Vegas is my favorite vacation place, but there are casinos on cruises these days, so cruise ships. So I'm probably not cruising more.
What's your favorite cruise destination, region?
Mediterranean.
Oh, wow.
Susan and I enjoy the Mediterranean, and we've tried to go back. Venice is my all-time favorite place in the time. Have Becky been to Venice?
No, we haven't really been to Europe.
One thing I would tell students at K-State that I regretted, that not having international travel and not being able to study abroad. Both my kids had that experience, both Chris and Mary Catherine, and I did not. And we just kind of catching up. It is remarkable. We enjoy the Mediterranean, although the Caribbean's awful nice too. But we enjoy, if we have a choice, the Mediterranean.
As a general observation, one of the things I love about this new generation is they're willing to live a more stripped down lifestyle, and so that they have money to travel. I see so many young people in Scotland and, you know, just traveling all over the place. And I'm thinking, what, you know, we were taught to save that for your retirement when you're not physically fit. And here they are in their 20s, 30s, just traveling all over the place. I really admire them for that.
Well, I think it's affected higher education, and it's affected the people, students out of high school, thinking about lots of other options and not, career choices, travel, working. The marketplace has changed considerably. And part of it is the interest of wanting to maybe do things more for now rather than later. Yeah, I grew up, I'm 73, be 74 in October, a generation of deferred gratification. You saved, you looked for the future, you thought about, you asked questions about retirement benefits and health care. Today, they're not asking those kinds of questions. They're asking, how much time do I have at home, and can I do this job remote? Can I be at home? And it's a whole other, because I've got other interests. I have people today have lots of, and even before COVID, I think people have a lot of other priorities in life, and it's not always 9 to 5.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, COVID forced me home to work out of my home, and I haven't gone back. I mean, we lost our lease during COVID, which was such a blessing, and now I have a studio at home and hang out with two dogs all day. It's a pretty good life, and I think I'm actually more efficient doing this because I.
Well, you think about the staff, the staffing requirements, the technology, the whole things have. To speak the obvious, I mean, things have changed dramatically. Both Mary Catherine and Chris, my son and daughter, work at home in Kansas City. My son, 23 years, worked for Accenture, traveled around the world, was gone Sunday through Thursday every day for 23 years.
Wow.
Today, he has a job with corporate America, not Accenture, and works at home. And is home with his wife, Stacy. It's just incredible. And the same thing with my daughter, who works for Children's Mercy in Kansas City, and my son-in-law, who works in medical billing. They're both working at home. It's just a whole nother world. And
go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm just struck, though, that the technology has connected so many of us. For example, I'm in a prostate cancer support group, and I'm the only American in it. It's somehow I got invited in as there's a Canadian in it with me, but it's all English and mostly Irish guys that, you know, in that whole region that's crawled up into Scandinavia a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I'm in this group with these guys that are all going through the similar things at the similar age. And I know this, if Becky and I ever go to England and Scotland, in Ireland, and we got a whole bunch of friends over there. It's just crazy with how the world's evolved.
You know, you mentioned your plight with cancer, but what you've done to educate all of us about the need for screening and to share your personal story, Tim, is just so impactful. I thank you for that. You're in my thoughts and prayers. You and Becky, what you've gone through and your willingness to share your courage is just it's just rare. And I greatly appreciate your interest in helping all of us understand the importance of screening, the importance of prevention, and also what you're going through. It gives us all pause, and I thank you for that.
When bad things happen, my instinct after that moment of woe is me, which you need to get out of as soon as possible, what am I going to do with this? That's my instinct. We had this happen. What am I going to do with this? And this was the greatest test of it. And I decided early on when I got my, you know, they gave me 6 years to live, and I'm 5 years into that and nowhere close to meeting that deadline. I'm going to keep going for quite a while. But when they gave me that, I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And I thought, you know, I remembered when I got my call from an insurance agent with SelectQuote. I was at the NCAA tournament in Atlanta, and I answered the phone, and I don't know why I answered the phone because it looked like a spam caller coming in, but I answered the phone, and he told me your PSA score is too high, and I didn't know what a PSA score was, and I had no clue what it was. And wow. I thought, well, I'm not going to let that happen to anyone around me. They're going to know what a PSA score is. They're going to know about testing and the value of testing. And as I got into it, I started researching breast cancer and the history of the whole breast cancer awareness movement. And it just struck me, we're going through that with prostate cancer. We're just 30 years behind. I mean, we're literally, men don't want to test. They don't know anything about it. They want to ignore it. The medical field really doesn't pay that much attention to it. And I thought, I got to do something with this. And I remember telling myself, by God, if it's going to get me, I'm going to save at least two guys. I'm going to come out ahead on the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I think you've done more than that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate your comments about African Americans and what the research is indicating for our good friends from that community. You've just done a remarkable job, and I thank you for that. You've affected more than two people.
Yeah, it's minority communities is just awful, and I don't know if it's genetic or access to care, but it's three times the rate. It's awful. So when you go to Vegas, where do you stay? Do you have a place in Vegas?
I lose enough money that we get to rooms comp during the week at the Harris properties. Nice. Sometimes we splurge, and if I could, the Wynn Encore property, which Susan really enjoys.
I love it.
They give you a reasonable rate only if you play poker 6 hours every day.
And you volunteer to do that, right?
I have to do that. I have to do that so that we have a rate that we feel comfortable with. It's a sacrifice.
It's your giver. Yes.
Someone has to do that.
Absolutely.
But outside of that, we stay at the Harris property more than anything else.
Yeah.
During the week, I don't lose enough to be able to have a comp room on the Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. But I'll be all right during the week.
Plus, as you know, Vegas during the week and Vegas during the weekend are two different places.
That's true.
The LA folk roll in and are drunk for 3 days. Pretty much is what the weekend.
That's true. That California crowd is just terrible. Too.
Yeah,
but they're lousy poker players, so I like to have them come in.
Yeah, you do love poker, don't you? When did that come about?
Well, that's right. You're a journalist. I forgot about that. You didn't expect questions. My father had an eighth grade education, loved K-State. He's buried back in Syracuse, New York, in K-State, where the K-State hat and the K-State Powercat pin. I'll tell you about that, Powercat pin story in a moment. But we were in Vegas with my father and my son, Chris, and the three of us walked by the poker room in Flamingo probably in the early 80s. And we were intrigued by learning the game together. So the three of us sat down in a poker dealer on a quiet Wednesday morning, spent a couple hours teaching us seven card stud, which was the game during the early 80s, and that caught fire. And so something that my father and my son Chris and I had in common, and so it just kind of evolved from there.
And I understand we have a mutual friend in Ben Hemman that you play with. Ben, is Ben a good poker player? Because I feel like Ben would have the worst tells in the whole world. You just know what's up with him.
You know, Ben is a remarkable gentleman. He really is. He's good at everything. I knew Ben as a student leader at K-State.
Right.
He helped with several projects as an undergraduate, and he's the same way today. He's well organized. He's thoughtful. Incredible manager. If I owned a company, he would be one of the first people I would hire. He's a fair poker player.
I bet he's the loudest at the game, though.
He can get. we play in a group of all K-Staters, and of course Ben is very knowledgeable about K-State and everything K-State is, as you know, and he's very passionate about everything he does. He's a real hero of ours. He's had some health issues as well, and always comes out with a smile on his face. He's just a great guy, man. Tomorrow night, we're doing Chris and his wife Stacy. We host a barbecue event, part of the Lenexa barbecue every year on Friday night. And Ben helps with that. He doesn't have to, but he just pitches in and just rolls up his sleeves and makes things easier for the people around him. But as a poker player, he's probably average. Like I am. I'm a bowl average.
When our house flooded years ago, not long after we moved in over here on our little street near the football stadium, and the first one at our house was Ben to help us.
And is that right?
Yeah, and he stayed for. I put an all points out via text to all my guys that were, you know, my buddies, and also we had a Go Power Cat softball team. It was the evolution of the Purple Pig softball team that Doc Weefald pitched for, became the Purple Pig Go Power Cat team, and then eventually Go Power Cat, which Ben took over the pitching duties for me. So, but when I put out the all points, Ben was here within moments. I mean, I don't know how he got here that fast. It was
that's Ben Hammond. That is Ben Hammond. Yeah. I remember the afternoon that his mother called me. I remember her voice called me. I have a high school senior that you need to recruit. And it was the spring of his senior year. And that started my recruiting of Ben Hammond. His mother called me. Saying that he is interested, but hasn't really been focused yet on a school, thinking about KU. And, of course, that lit my fire underneath me. And the rest is history. And his brother, Adam, is another wonderful gentleman. Family is great. Great people.
Well, that's enough about Ben Hammond. We've had enough. Yeah. tell me about the Power Cat pen with your dad.
Oh, my we were we were in New Orleans after we lost, and my son Chris and Susan and I, after we lose, I just kind of get into a funk.
Yeah.
We were at a restaurant off the Bourbon Street, and kind of a faraway table by ourselves, and a gentleman approached us, comes over, and he says, "Dr. Bosco, I've been hoping I'd run into you." And he introduces himself, and he says, when my son was a high school junior, we came in for junior day, and you were speaking in Forum Hall, and we brought our four-year-old with us. And as you were walking around Forum Hall giving your speech about K-State, you came over to my four-year-old and said something to him or touched him in some way. I thought he was being disruptive. It turned out you gave him your Power Cat lapel pin, 4 years old. He said, "Now, I want to let you know that my junior at the time came to K-State and he's graduated. My four-year-old graduated from K-State." Mm. And he takes out his phone. This last January, takes out his phone and he's swiping real quick in front of my son Chris and Susan, my wife, swiping, and he shows me the Power Cat pin that I gave his 4-year-old son back 20 some odd years ago. Actually, it was 2001, so it was 22 years ago. He kept a picture of the Power Cat pin that I gave him. I take the phone from him and I show it to my son, Chris. I said, "See that pin? That was our original K-State pin that you put on Grandpa's lapel of the sport coat when we buried him 22 years ago."
Man.
So it was just one of those moments where, my Lord, a gentleman kept this memory. It was looking for me for years. And it was the same model pin that that my son Chris pinned on his grandpa before, as we buried him.
That's an amazing story. But also, I take from that, boy, you're old.
Right. That's true. That is true.
You're out there recruiting the 4-year-olds, and they're graduated into a career.
Oh my God! Yes, the generations. I had someone sent me a. Oh, my Lord. I've been so blessed, Tim. The fact that we're talking 4 years after I retired, you're still interested in someone like me. This fall, a nice lady sent me a picture of me and her daughter, a 4-year-old, 4 or 5-year-old daughter, on the on the bronze power cat in the back of the alumni building.
Mm-hmm.
The mother, the daughter, and me. And she sent me a picture of the mother and her daughter, who was a K-State freshman, and the same picture, or not same location. And said, so I just want to let you know. And I didn't know about it. You put it on some Instagram or Facebook or something, and someone sent it to me. And it was just the full circle. It's fun.
Yeah.
To have that kind of memory and impact.
I've got two more things for you. First of all, I warned you I was going to ask you, dude, you got a plaza named after you. I don't know anyone else with a plaza. I know people with statues, eat rocks. You have a plaza on campus, and it is awesome. Well, that's got to be just amazing to have your name on that.
Overwhelming, humbling. John Weefall, Bob Krause called me into the president's office to tell me that the students were going to do this, and it was going to go before the regents. And I said, yeah, I don't feel comfortable having that happen. Maybe they should wait. And I think maybe, Tim, candidly, because of our conversation about President Weefall, I was thinking, they ought to do that for Weefall, not for me, because he's the one that made everything happen. And it was Weefall that leaned across his desk and said, no, I want you to have this. You deserve it. It's coming from students, and there's nothing more important for us to have some kind of honor coming like this from our students. Yesterday I was at Dick's here in town buying an air hockey table for our grandchildren. And the air hockey table, 300 pounds and all kinds of gadgets and all kind of good stuff. And I have to have someone not only deliver it, but haul it to the basement of our home and then assemble it, because I don't even have a screwdriver. I was talking to the salesperson, and the salesperson says, you're Pat Bosco. And I said, yeah, well we know all about you. And the lady next to him said, Bosco like the plaza? Bosco like the plaza. Yeah.
That's me.
I've had a couple of brief conversations with Coach Tang. Doesn't know me from Adam, but I would like to be hang with Tang and show up on the Bosco Plaza for one of his programs.
I like it.
It would be on the purple couch.
Man, you brought these podcasts together. That Coach Tang was my previous one, and we talked about the purple couch. So you brought this full circle. And the other thing I've got to ask you about is the purple vehicles. When was your first one? And how the heck did you find it? Because purple is not an easy car color to find. It's out there.
That's a great story.
But yeah, go ahead.
You do?
I did. I had a purple GMC Jimmy when we first started our company in 98. And I drove that thing in the ground going to games. But yeah, they're hard to find.
Well, it's a custom. It's all with Russ Briggs. At Briggs, I went in and we started with a Jeep. And I needed a Jeep for softball to haul kids and equipment around.
Interesting.
And all I had was a Sabre Buick, I think it was at the time. And I started with a gray Jeep with a small power cat and a purple stripe along the side. And I had that Jeep for Briggs, and he put the power cat on and a small purple line. The next Jeep, I went in with Russ, and because I know nothing about cars, and cars have never been important to me, I said, what about the possibility of painting a Jeep purple? He said, we could do that. And I said, I couldn't afford what it would cost. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll split it with you. So he split the cost of the paint job, and they came up with a purple color that I had several Jeeps, and then I moved into Affinities. I had several Affinities, and then finally a couple of Lexuses. But they've always been negotiated. I shouldn't say negotiate, because Russ really organized everything for me. He was very gracious. We split the paint job. And it an $8,000 paint job.
Oh, $8,000.
So I still have my last Lexus. I drove it to Kansas City yesterday, And it's a hit no matter where we go. People comment and know about it. And so it's just fun to have around. And people still take their pictures with it. K-Staters, no matter where I am, they want to come up and have a picture along with the purple car. And tomorrow we'll take it to the Alexa barbecue, and again it'll be a hit. But it's been a lot of fun. And Rust Springs organized it many, many years ago and kept it going.
That's incredible. Is it the same shade of purple he's been using?
Yeah, right. Yeah, same shade. They call it K-State Bosco Purple at Briggs.
I was going to say, they better call it Bosco Purple.
Yeah.
Because it's spot on. It's the perfect color. It really
is. Yeah, it is. It is. It's striking. It is striking.
Well, it's amazing. Even in retirement, you're out selling. You're selling.
Always. As a matter of fact, this morning I had an email from a parent in Colorado. He wanted me to visit with his son, who's a high school junior, who's interested in coming to K-State. And we organized a conversation with our financial aid people, and he's into lacrosse. We have a club lacrosse team, and the good people at Rec Services hooked him up with all the good information about our lacrosse club. Hey, we've lost some good people in the last few years. I know we saw each other, Becky, you and me had a brief conversation at the Jack Veneer service and Ernie's service. Yep. We also lost Mike Holen, who was a tremendous, you know, he was our faculty rep for the Big 12 for a number of years and represented us through the Weefald years. Susan Scott was one of the founders of the Leadership Studies program, along with myself and Bernard Franklin. She passed away. Jack Veneer. The Veneers have been wonderful to K-State in so many ways. My Bosco Leadership Scholarship Program was established by Mary Veneer.
Yep.
Help us get that started. So they've just been absolutely wonderful. I know they've been good for you as well. Yeah. Been good and supportive to you as well.
Yep. They define Kansas State. Generous beyond understanding and humble. They don't display their money. You don't have any clue. It's just they're the definition of K-Staters in that sense.
Oh, so authentic and sincere and genuine.
Yeah.
Just absolutely. We're so blessed. So blessed.
Well, Pat, I appreciate it so much. This has been fun. This has been great. I don't play poker, so don't invite me. Unless you want to take all my money,
we'll teach you. We have teachable moments.
Like when here's what you did wrong when you went all in with the pair of twos. Yeah, that wasn't good.
We're just glad you're around us. Tim, thank you for honoring me with this program. I'm not sure how helpful I was or informative, but I enjoy you from a distance. I don't really understand all the technology stuff. My brother-in-law Tom Carlin sends me stuff from the internet. It might be of interest, so I get a chance to keep up with you that way. And I do get on YouTube, and so I see some of your stuff on YouTube. And I watch the drive.
Good.
Occasionally, I watch that. I think you're too. I think you're trying to be too polite with KU. I just wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, it's
that's not only criticism, Tim. You try to be
diplomatic.
I don't know. Diplomatic, right? Yes. And I could never be really diplomatic. I love driving the purple car now through Lawrence. When years ago, people would wave to me, but they wouldn't use all their fingers.
It's very, very nice in a way.
But now I can answer them back because I'm not anybody's payroll anymore.
Well, that's good. I'll have to maybe take that up sometime. I'm not sure. Pat, thank you so much, man. You're the best. Love you. Appreciate everything you've done for Kansas State through the years. And it's a better place because Pat Bosco is part of it.
No, you're very kind. And Tim, thank you. And you're in my thoughts and prayers.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you. Later. Go Cats.
How do you not love that dude? Even if you've never met Pat Bosco, just listening to that enthusiasm in his voice. Man, he loves Kansas State. And he did so much for Kansas State. When your legacy is having both a plaza on the campus named after you and a K-State purple color named after you, you've left a lasting impact. But those aren't the great things that Bosco will be remembered for. It's all of his connections with people. He knew who I was as a student body member in the mid-80s, maybe because I worked for the Kansas State Collegian. But through the years, he knew so many of us who attended Kansas State. It's a gift for connecting with people in real ways, completely sincere and amazing. Kansas State will forever remember Pat Bosco and his impact. And I'm so glad he's my friend to this day, because he's a special man and a special part of this university's history. Well, that's it for this week. Remember, man, get out there. Get that PSA scored. Make sure you stay ahead of prostate cancer. Trust me, you want to do it. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you real soon.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.